All right, so today I am so excited to be joined by Joey Monroe. How are you today, Joey?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for asking. So I had posted on LinkedIn about how people are reacting to AI or how it's impacted their career, or their outlook, and Joey was so kind as to respond and say he was down for talking about how he is responding to the advent of AI. And so I just want to open the floor and see, you know, what your exposure to artificial intelligence has been, what your response has been, and kind of, you know, what has the journey been like for you since the advent of especially generative AI over the past couple of years?
Sure. So I work for a small consulting firm called Blue Gator, and we typically deal with nonprofits in the arts, culture, and entertainment space. So where I started was where probably a lot of people got started, is just kind of messing around with ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok, all of the different models that came out, especially in the early days when everything was pretty rudimentary. And that got me kind of down a path of, okay, I'm going to see where this goes, play with it a little bit, see what I can really get out of these tools. And as we jumped into a rather large project that I'm on, they were kind of all on board the Agentforce train. They really wanted to see what it could accomplish for their organization, how it could augment what they had going. And that was in the very early days of Agentforce, Agentforce 1, if everyone's familiar with those designations now. So really, I didn't know a ton about Agentforce. So my journey was learn as quickly and as completely as I possibly could on what is it, how do we use it, how to configure it. So that really started with Trailheads, and that kind of path started very piecemeal, as you know, is that that started to come more cohesive over time in terms of that training path. Now we have the Trailblazer paths and everything like that, and really getting that under my belt and then getting the Trailblazer path under my belt, attending every workshop that I could find up here in Tulsa, down here, online, basically getting my hands on anything related to generative AI, whether it was Agentforce or not, because they all are intertwined. They have basic fundamental similarities. And then getting hands-on of, we created a proof of concept for our client and got it client-facing. We learned a lot about how people interact with this, where it kind of needs to be placed in a support funnel. This was a support agent in this case, and really learned a lot more than I thought I would in terms of how important instruction writing is, of how it's a blend of an art and a science, honestly. And yeah, just going from there with different proofs of concept. Now we're up to about three different service agents. I'm working on some SDRs. We're also working on an internal agent. So there's that kind of exploded from there. So a lot of what I'm doing now is hands-on work, seeing how everything happens in real world rather than just an isolated perfect ecosystem that someone might think of.
Right. So what has the result been? Because I know there's been a lot of angst and worry about the pricing of Agentforce. Have your clients that you've worked with seen a return on investment, a decrease in the workload for their human service reps? What's the main takeaway been as far as the usage of Agentforce, the pricing, and the mood of the clients?
Yeah, so I think the pricing when it first came out, the $2 per conversation, that was a sticking point for a lot of people, especially on our nonprofit side, where they're like, there is no world where that makes sense for a nonprofit. Even the bigger nonprofits were very hesitant to try to take that on. And my client, who is not a nonprofit, even they were very, We really have to get ROI out of this, otherwise it doesn't make sense. We found that good ROI in terms, they had specific instances where they had a crush of orders that needed support and they don't have the hands to do that. So we framed that in the way of what is our labor savings? How many people would we need to bring on in like a seasonal or temporary basis? And that's where we contrasted what those conversations would be versus hands-on keyboard kind of folks, because most of the work that needed to be done was answering FAQs, making simple order updates, account and contact information updates. All of that is well within the realm of what AI can do consistently, without too much worry around hallucinations and kind of veering off the path. And we're in non-regulated industry, which definitely helps.
Right.
But moving into the new pricing model, I was really excited about that because it really fundamentally changed how expensive everything is, made it more approachable, especially for our nonprofit clients, in that if you architect the agent correctly to use as few actions as possible, because now everything is based on action consumption rather than a whole conversation, you can really make some impact and you can really have value driven out of that if you architect it right. And that is the crucial point that we've learned with this new pricing model is, can AI do it is no longer the question. Is should AI do it? Should AI do these things, or can we do deterministic things through Flow or Apex and then feed that information into the agent so that we're not consuming credits through an action that is trying to take on to itself? So even the architecture has really changed over that time.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting because it does force you to think about, in essence, action optimization and trying to limit that to where it's more necessary. And that can reduce, I guess, the expense for the client greatly by leveraging the out-of-the-box functionality and other tools to where it's not necessarily Agentforce for everything. As with anything with Salesforce, is figuring out the best approach and letting those various options do what they do best. And so, for the most part, it sounds like, and I loved you mentioning the word augment. And I think that's the answer with AI is not to replace, but to augment the capabilities of those of us working on the platform and organizations as well to be able to do more. And especially in those situations where, as you mentioned, there's a crush of orders, if you will. So some of these solutions that sound like service agents. Have you done a lot around creating like Agentforce data libraries, setting up knowledge articles, that sort of thing? And kind of tell me a little bit about some of the different findings as far as setting that up, some surprises, things that Agentforce does well, things that Agentforce struggles with, anything in between.
Yeah, so in terms of data libraries and knowledge base, that was definitely a part of our original proofs of concept, because one of the biggest drivers for those crush of order updates was also just simple FAQs of what is a policy here, what am I allowed to do here, what is your refund policy, all of these types of things that are, I'll call them like transactional, is they get the answer, they're happy, they move on. But that still takes up a lot of a human's time. So that was a big important piece. So gathering up all of the FAQs, making sure that they are up to date and in a clean format. One of the things that we ran into is we had a few kind of older documents, older PDFs that were kind of a scan of scan types of
Okay.
things where you have artifacting and everything like that.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to like that, at least at that time. I think it's gotten a little bit better with the chunking and vectoring and really parsing that information out. But we found that that can be some types of a struggle. So structuring documents like that, if you're going to use a data library, is very, very important to make sure it's clean, it's efficiently laid out, so that when semantic search hits that, it's able to find the correct response. So you don't want just a giant document that's a jumble of things that it has to try and figure out what you're talking about. Because if that happens, you start to get not necessarily hallucinations, but it'll start picking out things from the wrong areas. I think that's kind of a pervasive issue with anything RAG, is if it's not structured correctly, it has difficulty there.
Okay. Have you had, there's been a lot of debate about data masking and the whole journey of a prompt. And have you had any issues with, as reasoning engines have come about more in the Atlas reasoning engine and Agentforce, it seems like there was almost a step back in the responses from Agentforce, and then I've seen Salesforce kind of quietly move away from data masking so much. I guess I'm curious because you mentioned the art and the science of writing instructions, and it is, I think, continually a moving target with just generative AI in general, and just trying to keep up with all the changes and best practices that seem to be changing a lot. Are there certain models that you've seen perform better than others, and have you seen a need to maybe lay off of the data masking some in order to get better results? What are you finding right now on the ground are the best models that you're selecting and your approaches for to data mask or not to data mask? And I think you mentioned that a lot of the work you've been doing is in a not a heavily regulated area, so maybe you've got a little more freedom there. So can you speak to all that? I know I'm kind of all over the place, but this is just more for my own personal information, but I think if I'm interested in it, hopefully others will be as well. So
Yeah, so in terms of model selection, that's a lot of, as with a lot of things in this, is trial and error of what are we trying to accomplish in this? What inputs are we looking for, and what outputs are we looking for? So that will dictate, because every model kind of has their own flavor of how they respond and what kind of inputs they like, is testing out those models. I'm a fan of GPT-4 and kind of the Omni version of that. For most things, I've found that that works just fine. I haven't spread too far beyond that. I will very shortly, because we're kind of messing with document API and kind of that beta of what they're doing with that. And some of that will change because of the input being documents, images, things like that, where other models might shine more. But some of the other considerations are token limits. Do you have a really complex agent with a lot of complex actions in the background that are going to use a lot of token space? If that's the case, you really want to make sure that the model that you're using, number one, accepts that many tokens, because each model has different token limits. But also, is it efficient? Are you going to run into issues, especially over multiple turns within that agent conversation, or within, even if you have a headless agent which doesn't have a conversational interface, if you have something running in the background, planning out the worst case scenario of, am I going to hit token limits? Am I going to run into these things where it just kind of falls on its face? So a lot of that is just iteration upon iteration upon iteration, and testing out those worst case scenarios. And kind of the same goes for instructions and testing for hallucinations, is sometimes I just have to give some prompts to my team and let them go wild and try to break it. Because as the person building it, you're thinking very narrowly
Right.
a lot of the time, and customers will find a way to break it. They will find a way to confuse it. So on that, on the data masking piece, I haven't had quite as much exposure to that.
Okay.
I know there was an issue with that very early on, where they kind of disabled that for a while. Generally speaking, I think from a security and architecture point of view, anything that is in encrypted field or sensitive data needs to be handled very, very carefully, no matter what you're doing. I know we have the benefit of the trust layer. Data masking is still kind of an open question in that area, but it has to be very carefully thought through when you're in a regulated industry or you have sensitive data passing through that trust layer into a model. We have no share, no train agreements in the background of all of these things. Personally, I don't feel that's sufficient. That's a best case scenario, but that doesn't
Trust us.
stop. Yeah, that doesn't stop data leakage. That doesn't stop exposure. That's oops, it happened, but we had this agreement. Okay, that still happened.
And that leaked as well.
Yeah.
So, what was your journey to discovering Salesforce? Tell me a little bit about your journey, your career. I've been, perusing your LinkedIn profile, and so what led you to Salesforce, even pre-Agentforce? What was that spark?
Yeah, so I spent around 10 years in IT infrastructure, anywhere from your basic help desk up to IT director. And really, I got my start here in Salesforce because there was an opening for an IT manager role in a local nonprofit here called Oklahoma Diversion Hub. And as with most nonprofits, my nonprofit people will understand this, you wear a lot of hats. And you kind of have to be able to juggle those. So they needed someone who could come in and be an IT manager, but also learn Salesforce. And I had a little bit of a background with ERPs and managing those as well. So they basically said, you have about 3 months to learn and implement Salesforce for us. We just bought it and go. So that was my introduction. It's just a trial by fire of learning everything I could, implementing it as quickly as possible so that we could start taking clients. That was kind of my start in both the nonprofit and Salesforce areas. And then from there, my entire career up to now has been Salesforce consulting, specifically with nonprofits.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I think that's, a great area to be involved in, and I think there's a lot of opportunity in the nonprofit realm as well for people to gain that experience, and then it shows, I think, a lot of flexibility to be able to do a lot of different things also. So also in looking at your background, I see you've written a book as well. And so I've got a book coming out in a couple of months on the Salesforce Platform Administrator certification. But the reason I bring that up is because communication is really important nowadays with all the instructions you've got to write, the communication, the prompts. Talk a little bit about technical versus non-technical skills, those quote unquote soft skills that are sometimes really hard to acquire as far as communication. What role does that play in what you do day to day in the realm of generative AI?
Yeah, so just generally speaking, it's absolutely critical. Anyone I've ever mentored, I think anything in tech, but specifically within the Salesforce realm, there's this kind of drive for new people to gather as many certs as they can. Admin, platform builder, dev one, all of these things, because they think that's going to be the differentiator. And I wholeheartedly disagree with that. I think really you need to build a technical foundation to where you're literate and you understand, you know how things operate, you know how things work. But the other 50% of that is these soft skills, the business analyst skills, the communication skills of finding out why. Why is someone asking me to implement something, a flow or a form, or even as simple as a field? I want people to ask why, because 9 times out of 10, the customer doesn't know or really care about the technical solution. They want to solve an issue. And it's really our job as admins, as consultants, as whoever, to uncover that issue. And you can only do that by communicating. without communication, you become an order taker. And that's a very dangerous path because that almost assuredly leads to technical debt. Somewhere down the line, someone is going to have to unravel that. I have seen it so many times because I've seen so many orgs at this point in my consultant career. And I even look back at my early career as a Salesforce admin and have been like, I really should have done that differently. Had I really dug a little bit deeper into the why and the how, all of these things that really need answers and communication, soft skills, understanding business processes. Why are they the way that they are? Not just what are they, but why? And who are the people involved with that? All of that, even a little bit creatively, user experience is a huge, huge thing. People using this platform every single day, do they understand where to go for everything that they need to do to operate their job? So it's so multifaceted that I want people to step away from getting into the trap of being just hyper technical.
Gotcha. So, speaking of, certifications, what certifications do you have?
So I have the administrator, business analyst, AI associate that's now retired.
Darn it.
They the Agentforce specialist and the nonprofit cloud.
Gotcha. Okay, so good assortment there. But as you mentioned, it's kind of funny because people kind of look at me as like, "Oh, you're going to push certifications. I got a book coming out on it." But the experience trumps certifications. The certifications, I think, are a good framing device to learn things and to give you some sort of structure for your learning. But nothing trumps the hands-on, real-world experience that you gain whenever the happy path is not just presented to you on a platter, so that's for sure. And then, I see you as someone that is pro AI just in general on LinkedIn. I see you chiming in on some things, and I see a lot of people that are negative towards AI. And so, was there any sort of time in your embrace of AI that was there any hesitancy, or as soon as you saw the capabilities of AI, were you just jumping all in on it? Or was there that moment of doubt? What was your AI pivot story as far as coming to, I see you as someone that's embracing AI now, but what was your journey like in reaching that conclusion?
Sure. So, like a lot of people, I dipped my toe in, as we talked about earlier, is just in ChatGPT and that kind of thing, and really feeling out the power and the possibility behind this, and thinking forward. But I always temper that by trying to be a pragmatist of not going to either end of the spectrum, because there are what I will call the bandwagon, which is kind of blind optimism. And then there is the other side of the spectrum where it's just doom and gloom. This is the end of the world, or this won't ever work, all of that, when the reality is somewhere in the middle. We've seen these technological revolutions time after time throughout the history of recorded mankind. So being an early adopter with a touch of pragmatism is where I want to sit. I want to be as optimistic as is reasonable, but I want to reserve what I think is reasonable for my clients, for whoever I'm working with, to say, that's a great idea. Let's definitely look into that. But here's some of the drawbacks. Again, it goes back to that question of not going too far of AI everything. It's asking the questions of, does this make sense for AI to do? Not every task that we have in our lives makes sense for AI to do, either from cost to practicality or safety and security points of view. So treading that middle road is where I think I've landed and will continue to be on, is open to possibilities, but kind of I want to stay grounded in what the reasonable path is.
Got it. Yep. Sounds very reasonable, you know? And it's a lot of people push like an AI first mindset. I don't know if it needs to come first, but it certainly can't be AI only. And there are some things that AI doesn't do well at all, you know? So there's certain tangible things, especially. But it's fascinating to see how Salesforce is approaching figuring out AI. And I think that's what all tech companies are having to do is figure out, okay, what does this mean for us as an organization? And you know, I've been for the most part impressed with Agentforce, and it's changing all the time. You know, I try to teach Agentforce live. I'm a glutton for punishment, you know, because I'll go to search for something that has just been renamed, or I'll record something that is now obsolete. You know, that's the nature of technology. But you know, and then there's some things, there's some areas that have taken longer than I thought it would take to really take off. And then, you know, I was kind of anticipating automations being more profitable, and they're starting to be, but you know, you mentioned headless agents as well, or some things that can be done in the background and not necessarily with a user interaction. And so it does open up a lot of possibilities, causing us to kind of rethink how we architect things on the platform. And there's not necessarily a right answer. There's five different answers, and a lot of the battle is knowing and deciding which of those, and then as well documenting why those decisions were made. And so I think, kind of to round this out, what is next for you as far as what are the things on the horizon that really interest you and that you're excited about, and where are you heading in this next few months or year? And any more, time is measured in short increments. You talk about the old days of Agentforce and Agentforce One, and that was less than a year ago, you know. So what's your next chapter? I'm not going to say what's your next book, but what's your next chapter?
Yeah, so it's continuing on this path with Agentforce for sure. I've got to get around to getting the new legend status and all of that because I'm a bit of a completionist. I see that one grade out and I really got to get that. And there's a lot of really cool things within that content that I'm looking forward to. As you said, the release cycle on this has been frenetic in comparison to where it's been before in other portions of the platform. So even trying to keep up is a task in and of itself. As you mentioned, trying to teach it, I empowered our own team, trying to get them certified and did some study sessions and everything like that, and showing off the agent that I created. Here's a new toggle, or here's a new conversation variable. Here's all of these little things that have popped up since the last time that I looked at it. And those, it's a challenge to keep up with all of that for sure. But in terms of just broader Gen AI, I'm really looking into agent to agent, or MCP as well, being able to connect to other external tools and capabilities. And what I'm really hyper focused in is how do we secure all of this, especially around MCP, because it's such a honeypot for any would-be attacker, because then they can backdoor around to other agents and potentially execute things and vulnerabilities and all of these other tools that are now vitally connected to one another. So it's a little bit scary, but it's also very, very interesting on how all of this kind of wraps together. And then I'm also looking at other certifications outside of the Salesforce ecosystem, like certified AI consultant with USAII, the US Artificial Intelligence Institute, where it kind of goes over general AI strategy, machine learning, how to apply that towards clients, and just a general overview and capacity to kind of broaden out that skill set and make sure that it's not just Agentforce, that I'm thinking more holistically, because Agentforce is going to have to interact with other AI platforms, other AI agents, other MCPs, all of these things. It's not going to be contained within just the one ecosystem anymore.
Right. Yeah, I love the word frenetic. That was a great choice of words. You know, being a wordsmith or an aspiring wordsmith, always I fixate on words, and that's going to be my word of the day is frenetic, as far as that being the pace at which we need to approach this change, lifelong learning and all that. And so, you know, I see people kind of quasi brag on LinkedIn how I've not started learning Agentforce, and my thought is what are you waiting on? Because I've been learning it since the day of its release and before. With I mean Einstein back in 2017, I was creating courses on that Einstein Discovery, and the first inklings of generative AI there was its ability to generate R code, and I was just blown away back then. But with that rapid pace, you know, I think, and I think you would probably agree with this, it just makes sense to go ahead, even if people have been resistant, to kind of bite the bullet and start learning Agentforce, because the innovation train is not slowing down. And even for those of us that jumped on it early, it is a challenge to just keep up. Would you agree with that? Rather than encouraging people to wait and see, like, what's your view? What's the event horizon for you as far as encouraging others to start learning Agentforce?
Yeah, I would 100% agree. We talked about earlier around the technological revolutions, and we see those curves of your bleeding edge adopters, your early adopters, mainstream, and your laggards. And we see every single time in terms of how businesses operate, in terms of how innovation happens, the laggards always get punished severely. They either disappear, they become irrelevant, someone else comes around and disrupts them. So I would encourage everyone to at least learn about it. You don't have to implement it. You don't have to be the world's biggest champion about it, but to refuse yourself fluency of even learning or becoming adaptable to it is doing yourself and your clients a disservice, is my point of view.
Perfect. Yeah. All right. So, any final parting wisdom, Joey? Anything you want to leave for those to ponder as far as your own AI pivot and what the future might hold?
I would just say learn as much as you can. Again, remain pragmatic. Keep your feet on the ground. Look to be the optimist, but keep it realistic, is what I would say in terms of AI.
Perfect. All right. Thank you so much, Joey. Enjoyed the talk, and keep in touch and look forward to what you do next.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Mike.